The House Human Services Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum, and for members' information today, Representative Gander will be working with us remotely today as he had some things to deal with back home. The first item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Knorr moves approval of the minutes from February 26, 2025. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion is approved, and the minutes from February 26, 2025 are adopted. First item after the minutes today is a presentation from Leah Solo, the Executive Director for the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Ms. Solo, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name once again for the record and present your presentation.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. My name is Leah Solo, and I'm the Executive Director for the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. I've served in this role since the board got started in 2023, so I'm happy to report on our work thus far. So starting out, just to give you an overview of the board, we were created in the legislative session in 2023 and got started in our work in August of 2023. The purpose is to conduct investigations into working conditions in the nursing home industry and adopt rules establishing minimum employment standards reasonably necessary and appropriate to protect the health and welfare of nursing home workers. I'll go into a little bit more about what that looks like. First of all, who makes up the board? The board is made up of nine members. Three are commissioners or commissioner designees. Those are from the Department of Labor and Industry, the Department of Human Services, and the Minnesota Department of Health. And then six of the members are appointed by the governor, so three representing employers and three representing workers. We got straight to work in August of 2023 with our first meeting in shortly after, in September, after the appointments had been made. We got to work creating bylaws and a form of work groups. We started out with just three work groups. We're now up to six because a lot of different subjects that we needed to dive into have come up. Those work groups were set up in a way that we could invite advocates representing employers and representing employees to come to the table and really work collaboratively. So that we could really get in depth on issues. And we had a lot of those meetings. In those first 16 months, we had about 48 work group meetings and 25 full board meetings. So there has been a lot of conversation that has happened in these first months of the board. So a little bit more about what the purpose of all those meetings were. So in statute, it says that we are to perform investigations into market conditions. Having been quickly educated about the trigger word of investigations, I learned to call this research into data and public engagement. That seemed to sit better with folks. So we have been doing a lot of work diving into data that we could find about the working conditions of nursing home workers and talking with both employers and employees and the general public about the conditions that they find. An important part of this statute, I think, to point out is what I have bolded and italicized there: adopt minimum nursing home employment standards that meet or exceed existing industry conditions for a majority of nursing home workers. So I refer to that as the majority benchmark. So it was the idea that in our research, we needed to be looking for standards that would raise at least 50% plus one of the folks that were working in the industry, raise their conditions. So one of our work groups, and what as a board we dived into a lot, was public engagement. In our statute, it asks us to take public testimony, and we took that very seriously. We did 5 public forums, 2 virtually and 3 in person, so 1 in Brooklyn Park, 1 in Duluth, and 1 in Redwood Falls. And we invited people to come and talk. We had about 224 people show up to those forums, and oddly, the speakers split evenly down the middle between employers and employees who spoke at those forums. So I feel like that we did a good job of inviting both sides to come in and talk if we were getting even representation in speakers at those forums. We also had 3 online questionnaires. We figured some folks don't have time to show up to a forum, and so we wanted to offer an online way for people to engage, and we had about 200 people that responded in those online questionnaires as well. Timeline, as far as timeline, we did those in February and March of 2024. This was, of course, understanding that we had a deadline to complete our first set of rulemaking. It was originally in our original statute, August 1st of 2024. But that spring, we knew that that was going to be a little bit tight for us to make. So we did ask the legislature for a deadline, and it was moved to November 1st, 2024 for us to complete that first set of rulemaking. So beyond public engagement, as I mentioned, we also had an obligation to examine data. So we examined several data sets, one from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, also from the Department of Labor and Industry, and then a lot of data from the Department of Human Services. And we found that there was a unique set of data from DHS that we were able to format, and with the help of the wonderful team at DHS, we're able to format that into a spreadsheet that allowed us to plug in various minimum wages and be able to see what percentage of folks that would benefit. In our data work group, we also had advocates that brought data from the employer side, and that was derived from surveys, and we had a lot of discussion. Maybe it shouldn't have surprised me, but it did. We had some of our most robust debate in our data work group, and it was very, I think it was very healthy debate. So then that brought us to board deliberations. We had done that research and those public forums in the winter and early spring. And so then we dove into having 8 full board meetings where we discussed various proposals and looked at different options and ways that we could format the initial wage standards. We considered a lot of different occupations and geographies and ways that we could divide things up. And that brought us to our 2 sets of rules that went through expedited rulemaking. Both sets were passed initially through the board on May 9th of 2024, and then proceeded through rulemaking. This first set that I'll talk about is the initial wage standards. These are the earliest that these would go into effect would be January 1st, 2026. That is, of course, because they need an appropriation from the legislature and also federal approval before they can go into effect. Those minimum wages are up on this PowerPoint slide here, but I'll just say a couple things about those. So as I think a lot of minimum wages raises that we've seen over the last decade or so. There's been kind of a 1-2 or 1-2-3 step to arrive at a final wage. And so you see us doing that here with a first step January 1st, 2026, and then a second step January 1st, 2027. There is a general minimum wage, and for that will apply to folks like dietary workers, housekeeping, laundry, a lot of folks that provide the backbone of a nursing home. Then we have specific wages for certified nursing assistants or CNAs, trained medical assistants or TMAs, and licensed practical nurses or LPNs. And those, you can obviously see those up on the screen. I think the important thing to point out on this is that these standards met the majority benchmark. If you'd like, I'm happy to share, or you can find it on our website, a 14-page memo that goes through the various wages that we were looking at and how some of them met and some of them didn't meet the majority benchmark, and these did. All right. The second set of rules that we passed were holiday pay posting requirements and certified worker organization rules. These passed again through the board on May 9th, and they were a little bit longer, so it took a little bit longer for us to arrive at the final language. And they were, these standards became effective January 1st, 2025. They include holiday pay for workers. So that's for those that are working, the minimum requirement is that they are paid time and a half for 11 state holidays. Those state holidays are New Year's Day, MLK Day, President's Day, Memorial Day, Juneteenth, July 4th, Labor Day, Indigenous Peoples Day, Thanksgiving, Veterans Day, and Christmas. So those are the ones in statute, and so those were the ones that that we went with it for time and a half. It also includes rules and guidance around applications for organizations becoming certified worker organizations. So these are organizations in statute that we ask to go out and train workers on their rights under the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board Act. And finally, it also includes requirements for nursing homes to notify their workers about their rights under these acts. These are sometimes called posting requirements. This is when you see, you know, the posters on the, you know, on the bulletin board at a workplace. Or folks getting emails, those kinds of things about their rights. Let's see. So then the final thing that I wanted to make sure folks knew about was the waiver and variance process. So statute determines that that the board must develop a process for temporary waivers and variances if a nursing home could potentially face closure or receivership due to our standards. There was unanimous agreement on this process and getting it started right away. We wanted to make sure that that any nursing home that felt that they might face closure or receivership due to the holiday standards going into effect had a chance to ask for a waiver or variance. We had kind of special deadlines where we would guarantee that a nursing home could get an answer from us before December 31st, 2024, so that things would be ready to go. And so that launched December 11th. We sent out emails and notices to make sure that folks knew that was available. As of 2 days ago, when I last checked, we haven't had any applications for a waiver or a waiver or variance from the standards. So that's the big overview that I have about the board and our work so far. I'm happy to be around for questions or take questions now, whatever works for the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Solo, for your presentation today and for the work that you're doing on behalf of the board and on behalf of the state and the workers and the employers that are all involved in the process that you have here. I do have a couple of questions to get us kicked off with this, and just wondering really how the board looks at the definition of the workers. And you know, a lot of the conversation today is going to be about what role the legislature has in appropriating money and what fiscal assumptions and analysis have been made on the rules that are being put on and just what we have to pay for or what should be paid for. I think that's where a lot of the conversation is going to be going today. And so I'm wondering what is the definition of a nursing home worker? What falls into that? Do subcontractors fall into that? Non-emergency medical transportation, does that fall into that? IT workers, does that fall into that? Things like that. Can you give us a fairly kind of detailed description of what falls in, what doesn't fall in into the assumptions here, and who would be receiving these pieces, please?
Yeah, so nursing home worker is defined under 181.211. The definition is, I'll read it, apologies. Nursing home worker means any worker who provides services in a nursing home in Minnesota, including direct care staff, non-direct care staff, and contractors, but excluding administrative staff, medical directors, nursing directors, physicians, and individuals employed by a supplemental nursing services agency. So a lot of conversation at the board has focused on some of those roles that I mentioned earlier. So certified nursing assistants, TMAs, LPNs, dietary laundry, those housekeeping, those are a lot of the roles that we have talked about, but obviously, as you can see, it does include folks that might be there as contractors, and it does exclude several categories of folks.
Thank you, Ms. Solo, for that. So, if you're an independent contractor normally, but when you step into the nursing home, you are a nursing home worker. Under the board's understanding of this?
You could be, yes.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification there. On the assumptions piece, then, when we look at that, the board's determination that there would be no impact to the state budget on the 11 holiday piece, and I think that's part of what the discussion will be with the bills coming forward too. Mm-hmm. How did the board come to the conclusion that there would be no impact for adding, I think, what, 5.5 holiday days on average?
Yes. So this is, we used what is defined in statute, and this is under 181.213, subdivision 2. There are some specifics about how we are supposed to do the calculations around that. We work with DHS, who is, you know, kind of the experts on how this would be figured out. My understanding is that because it fell below what is already assumed to increase in rates, then it was determined to not need an appropriation.
To that, Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's an important question that we should get the agency, someone from DHS, to really walk us through how that works.
Director Bailey, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and help us with this question.
Thank you, Chair and members. I'm Elise Bailey, the Budget Director of the Department of Human Services. As Ms. Solo described, what the law requires us to do is to look at what the standard is and compare that to what we currently have in the current forecast. Of course, nursing homes are paid via the VBR rate methodology, which increases over time. And that rate methodology is based on cost reports that the agency receives. The average increase we have in the current forecast is about 4.78% per year on average. And we assume that, or based on the estimates, we assumed that the increase to the holiday pay is 0.655% increase, well below what the VBR average increase over time is. Therefore, we assumed that the cost would be within the value-based reimbursement over time.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can see a clear picture where the VBR interacts with the board. So given that it's 0.655%, is that correct?
Director Bailey.
Chair Schellmarker, Representative Knorr, yes.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the assumption is everything that we're talking about, whatever the board will do, is already baked in as part of the cost reporting in the next initial phase when they start paying the holiday pay.
Director Bailey.
Chair Schellmacher, Representative Knorr, yes, for that the first rule, correct.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Director Bailey, how does this work then with the payment delays that we have, the difference between the cost reports and when those actually start to get paid out? So the homes starting January 1st are getting rates based on the cost from 2023, but they have these holidays to pay now, that extra 0.6%. How does that catch up? How does that line up for what they're having to spend today in order to get those increases in the future?
Chair Schellmacher, members, this is just like any other costs that increase over time. Say, you know, the nursing homes increase wages January 1st, that wouldn't show up into the rates until around 18 to 24 months later. The holiday pay is no different. And based on what the law currently requires us to do in the analysis, we assume it's just like any other cost.
Thank you. And would the assumption be similar to that with the minimum wage piece?
Chair Schellmacher, the minimum wage analysis did show that, you know, comparing the current wages and the increases in the likely increases in wages over time under current law versus what is being proposed as a minimum wage, that would result in an increased cost to the rates over time. That is why the governor's budget is coming forward as instructed by the law to say if we were to implement this standard, the VBR or the forecast would need to have an additional appropriation to implement it. So to answer your timing question, yes, it would be the same, although we're assuming an effective date that is January 1st, 2026.
Thank you, Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on the waiver request. So none of the nursing homes have requested a waiver. And also, do we know if any of the nursing homes that are undergoing receivership at this moment?
Director Bailey. Or Ms. Solo.
I will just confirm that no nursing homes have requested a waiver from the holiday pay. We received maybe a handful of inquiries about how to implement, but those seems to have been answered. And as far as any nursing homes under receivership, I would not have that information, but I think that would be the Department of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. My question is for Ms. Solo. What nursing home experience do the three appointed governor representatives have on the board?
Director Solo.
Chair Schumacher, Representative. So as I mentioned, we have representatives from so the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry, who oversees the department that has a lot of involvement in worker safety, worker rights, those kinds of things. The representative from the Department of Human Services is Kim Brenny, who is quite knowledgeable about the finances of nursing homes and comes from a background of working in nursing homes. I don't have her biography in front of me right now, but she has been very helpful to the conversation. And then Maria King from the Minnesota Department of Health, who oversees nursing home surveys.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. So of the three, one has worked in a nursing home. Is that what I'm hearing? Or
Chair and Representative. Let's see. Commissioner Blissenbach actually shared that she worked in a nursing home as a teenager. And I don't know. As I mentioned, I don't have biographies in front of me, but Maria King is very knowledgeable about nursing homes and nursing home functions.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair. So when I think about this, Ms. Solo, I just wonder the challenges of a 24-hour care facility. If people have not had that lived experience, it's hard to kind of sort out how are they going to speak to the challenges of that if they have not experienced it. So that's just something that I'd like to put on the record, that's a concern of mine when you're setting standards as a board, as a group, like having that lived experience is really helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Becker.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, during your presentation, and we appreciate that, you were talking about, and I think this was a question that stemmed from Chair Schumacher, you know, on figuring the holiday pay, you talked about, okay, you worked with DHS to figure that out. What type of work was done actually with the nursing homes? To get feedback from the administrators, to give from people who have to do this day-to-day activity instead of someone who doesn't have those responsibilities.
Director Solo.
Chair, Representative. So as I mentioned, we did a significant amount of public engagement. Those five forums, those questionnaires, and of course we do have three representatives from the employer side and three representatives from the worker side on the board. I think we had robust conversation. There were certainly concerns that were brought up and were heard. And as I mentioned, we had some different data from the employer representatives that was presented to the board. Ultimately, we have to follow statute, which tells us exactly how we are supposed to cost things in statute, and so we used that data.
Representative Becker.
Yeah, follow up. I appreciate that. The concern that I have, and I think several of us have, is that this is being it's an additional burden put on our residents. Okay, I'm not even talking about the administration. I'm talking about when I respond to an ambulance run and I show up at 2 in the morning Saturday and so forth. My concern is the care to those residents, okay? And when you put these additional burden, especially, I mean, I know a lot of the staff people at the nursing home that I provide service when we're called, and you just don't hear that people want holidays off. They want additional dollars to provide service. So I'm just quite concerned that this is being driven by an agency who don't have the boots on the ground like the people who have to provide care when someone falls out of the bed or doesn't hit the bed correctly, it's a broken femur, a broken pelvis, broken hip, but not all those type of runs. So, and that concerns me because your answer said, well, we worked with DHS instead of saying, well, you know what, we consulted certain of the nursing homes and so forth. Now, I'm not asking you to call the St. Francis home in Browns Valley, but I am concerned that what we're going to do is get less care instead of better care. So that's was my question and my comment, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Back. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. My question is about the board members. I also sort of feel like I ask this question all the time, so if people come in front of this committee, it's a good question to answer. Of the three representing employers and the three representing workers, what is the geographic spread? Because I do think over and over it's important, and often Greater Minnesota is missed. Then the following question is, how do you meet? Is it always in the cities? So if you have Greater Minnesota representation, are they the ones that are always driving to the cities for said meetings? I think we need to be really mindful of making sure that we see these pockets on all of these maps. And then when we ask for input, I just want to make sure that we're always mindful of the Greater Minnesota spread. Thank you, Chair.
Director Solo.
Chair and Representative, thank you for that question. So for employees, those representing the workers, we have one representative from Eveleth and then two from the Twin Cities area. The employer side, we have one from, it's west, so close to St. Cloud, but her company represents nursing homes all throughout kind of western and southern Minnesota, and then another from Detroit Lakes, and where is the third? And then the third is from the Marshall area. So that's the employer side. And then from the commissioners or commissioner designees, we have two in the Twin Cities and one in Mankato. So pretty good, I think, geographic representation. We have to abide by open meeting laws, which means that if we're doing a hybrid meeting, we have to have one board member at DLI, which is over at 443 Lafayette. We typically have at least some members that are online. We're especially sensitive to the winter and bad driving conditions and want to encourage people to sign on online when it's hard to be in person.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you. I deeply understand the driving in the winters here because that is a trek. Thank you. That's all I wanted to know. That is a good spread. And again, I think that I'll always ask this question because it's important for us to know. And also as we design boards and as individuals are looking for input, often remember that we are a border-to-border state with massive differences in the different regions of our communities. So thank you for the representation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's conversation that's happening in this committee this morning talking about lived experience and the makeup of the board. A question that I would ask Ms. Solo is, do you think that you need to have lived experience as a nursing home worker to know that getting spit on the job, getting assaulted on the job, getting groped on the job is good or bad? Or do you think that we can understand that those are working conditions that people who work in nursing homes may have to deal with?
Director Solo.
Chair, Representative, I think one of the really good things that the board has done is made sure that we have given space to hear from workers and from employers, both through those public forums, through public comment, and making sure that we're really examining those. And we have heard those stories, and I think it is impactful for the board.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that answer because I don't think it takes that personal experience, what you're outlining when it comes to listening to workers and then being able to take their stories and put that into this rulemaking. I think is one of the best things that this board does or can do. And I want to thank you for that work. And I want to thank all the workers that show up to share their stories. Stories change the world, and they impact legislation that we do in St. Paul. So I want to thank all the workers that are here for that. And so I just want to reiterate that we can find weird ways to try to nitpick board members, but if we are putting the workers, the people who are actually doing the work, front and center in what we do, then we're going to be successful and we're going to end up with good policy. I want to say that in addition to some of the other conversations that we've been here too, or having here, that we have to take care of workers. Yes, it is also important that the facilities stay up and running, and that means staff in those facilities to take care of the people. No one's ignorant of that. However, if we don't take care of the workers, then they leave. We see that happen. Ensuring the quality of work and the safety of the workplace being front and center ensures that the workers stay there to make sure that the people in these places get the care that they need. So centering workers, I think, is important with this board, and I want to say thank you for that, and I think we need to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Solo. In my area, nursing homes are, you know, very slim margins, run on very slim margins. Very many of them are borderline profitable at all. My question has to do with the per facility cost and how it compares to what the original fiscal note was for the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Can you give me an idea of how we're tracking versus what the original forecast was from the board?
Director Solo.
Chair, Representative, I think I may call a friend.
Director Bailey.
Chair Schumacher and Representative Murphy, when we originally did the fiscal note back last spring, I think when the rule was finalized, we didn't have the 28-29 forecast at that point. It was just 26 through 29. And so at that point, we were only tracking a small amount of cost in the tails because it was 26-27. It wouldn't have been in effect. And then 24, 25, 26, 27. So I would say the numbers aren't really comparable because we didn't have the tails impact. We kind of told the board what we assumed the tails impact would be, but we didn't have a current forecast to do the final estimate off of. I would say in the November forecast when we redid the estimate, it didn't shift dramatically from what we had assumed originally, but I don't have the exact numbers in front of me because we didn't have a forecast at the time for the tails biennium.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Bailey, for that. What is the estimated cost from the original? What did they suggest that it was going to cost per facility to do this? They must have some kind of expectation. What was it?
Director Bailey.
Let me look real quick. Chair Schumacher, Representative Murphy, I believe it was around $10 million in the tails is what we had assumed.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Ms. Bailey. How many providers is that $10 million spread over?
Director Bailey.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Murphy, I'd have to 320-ish.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that helps. That gives us the math on it. I'll just say that, quality care requires viable businesses, and those viable businesses offer employment, and they offer employment based on a lot of things in their communities and being competitive. But if we don't have the suppliers, the providers, and we lose beds because we're not able to compete well, that's going to be the problem. And in my area, a lot of nursing homes aren't running at capacity because they can't get the workers. And so there's a lot of struggles on both sides, but we definitely need to keep that in mind, that we need viable businesses if we're going to offer these services at all. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher, and I do think that there's value in hearing from a wide variety of stakeholders as we entertain these different proposals. And I think in passing, Director Solo, you mentioned that there was a public comment period as part of the rulemaking. I'm not very familiar with the rulemaking process, so can you kind of walk us through what that public comment process involves?
Director Solo.
Chair, Representative, the public comment period lasts 30 days, and so we have we send out notice. That's both a mailing and email to lots of lists that we have of folks that have signed up or folks that we think it would be important to hear from. So for instance, we mailed all of the nursing home administrators to make sure that they knew that this was that this was in the works, and then we intake all of the public comments. As a board, reviewed those comments. There on the minimum wages, we had hundreds submitted. I want to say off the top of my head, it was over 200 comments that we received. And examined those and discussed. And so after the comment period closes and we discuss those, there's an opportunity for the board to make any changes, substantial or non-substantial. If there are substantial changes, it has to go back out and through the process again. If there are insubstantial changes or no changes, then it can continue on in the process.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher and Director Soule. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher. My question is, was there a wide range of pay between rural nursing homes and metro nursing homes when you were doing your study to come up with the minimum wage scale?
Director Soule.
Chair and Representative, there was somewhat of a range, but without pulling up the data, my recollection is that it wasn't extremely large, and one of the theories on that was that in Greater Minnesota, there is maybe a longer retention, and so you have more senior people who are getting paid more. So even though the wages were slightly higher in the Twin Cities area, it wasn't a huge gap. And I'll say that the board did consider potentially doing separate or different levels for different areas. That is maybe a callback to, I think it's called the Rule of 50, which is no longer a thing, but set up different wage scales in different areas. The board ultimately decided not to, just given that folks in Greater Minnesota, also have high housing costs, have lots of driving that they have to do, and the thought was that we should be moving more towards equity between the various geographies.
Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that kind of leads into my next question, I guess, because I was wondering if you took those variables into account. And when the margins are that thin and you're saying, you know, it's not an extremely large difference, it's only a slight difference. I mean, I think the definition of what extremely large and slight is pretty important here, because you've got such slim margins for these operations. I just think it doesn't seem to make sense to me at all that we would have a one-size-fits-all approach to this. I think we should be staying out of this and we should be letting the free market work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gordon. Is there anyone else who has questions, any last-minute questions for the director? Seeing none, Director Solo, thank you for your time today and your presentation and for your work. And members, thank you for your interest in this effort. Now we will switch gavels. Please be kind to Representative Gilman. She hasn't done this before.
No. All right. So the first bill that we have up for consideration is House File 1419. Chair Schumacher, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1419 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future glorious omnibus bill.
Wonderful. Chair Schumacher moves the bill, and Chair Schumacher moves that House File 1419 be laid over. We have the bill before us. Chair, would you like your testifiers to go first?
I will introduce the bill as the testifiers make their way up, Madam Chair. House File 1419 is a bill that continues to make updates to our nursing facility payment system that we have referred to as the value-based reimbursement system. And it adds an annual update to our elderly waiver rate methodology. As we wait for the budget targets to come out in the next couple of weeks, in the updated forecast, I'm pleased to present this bill today. Back in 2015, I got to work on this project. Before then, we were spending every year for 30 years doing what I felt was a piecemeal approach to the rates that we had for nursing homes and working within the budgets of the state each time, and instead of having a solution that kept things going for the industry, they were spending more time focused on what percentage they might be able to get instead of what they could be doing more for the people they serve and the people that help them with their service. And so we wanted to bring a different approach, and we were able to do that with divided government at the time. And so it was always a pleasure to work with Senator Lori, who knows more about every bill that comes before him, even more than his own bills, I would say, and Governor Dayton to make sure that we got this done. We didn't have a real great surplus at the time to work with, but we were able to get some pieces there, and the economy at the time was also in question, as it is today. And so a number of parallels through there. The real difference is my hairline since then. When we enacted the VBR 10 years ago, it was designed to pay for the cost of care, to incentivize wage growth for direct care workers, to support the cost of food and resident services, and incentivize quality. It was not designed to absorb a pandemic, which we had to deal with in the last legislative session. And it was not designed to absorb staffing mandates like those that were finalized by the Workforce Standards Board, as we discussed in the first hour of the hearing today. As many of us have heard, we now find ourselves in a position when nursing homes submit their cost reports and it takes 1 to 2 years for the reimbursement to actually appear. It would be like a constituent using money from a 2023 paycheck to pay for 25 eggs at the grocery store. We would all have to make up adjustments to our budget in this scenario, but for many nursing homes, those adjustment impacts and access to care and the wage increases are only so much that they can afford. And I will say from back in that time, I know we've had discussions about this on the floor and in other places. Part of it was just the ability to stand up something that could wait 2 years or be able to process from the department. And also some of it was just a check on the nursing facilities too, that if they had to wait for those funds to come in, it wasn't going to be a race to the top of the rates that they had. And so there was a bit of a silver lining as we were putting that together, that there was some check on that along the way. In 2023, the legislature made significant investments in elderly waiver, the way that many low-income Minnesotans access their senior care like assisted living. That bill was carried by Representative Knorr into conference committee with the Senate. Unfortunately, the legislature was not able to include any direction to DHS to update the rates or wage benchmarks, which means that the elderly waiver program currently uses data from 2019 wages. The older that benchmark is, the less accurate it becomes at reflecting the current cost of care. This bill specifically, sections 1 and 7 pay for the direct cost of nursing home workforce standard board mandates for the holiday pay piece and the minimum wage piece. Sections 2 through 6 create a known cost adjustment to pay for future mandated minimum wage increases. And sections 8 through 10 provide an annual update of the elderly waiver rates. House File 1419 is a contrast to what the governor is proposing in his budget. There are caps to the what's being proposed in the increases in the rates in the governor's budget, and really reductions to the reimbursement for providers for expenses to labor, for food and resident activities, and things that have already all been paid for. And so with that, we would like to offer this contrast for the committee's consideration, and I will turn it over to the testifiers.
Wonderful. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and tell who you represent.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Toby Pearson. I'm President and CEO of Care Providers Minnesota, here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I'm here to express support for House File 1419. This proposal represents a stark contrast to the governor's budget. This proposal prioritizes our seniors, their caregivers, and the sustainability of senior long-term care in every part of Minnesota. The governor's budget represents a regressive shift in how Minnesota funds nursing facilities. It dismantles what was a bipartisan agreement on a system that was designed on shared values. Instead, it reverts to a pre-2016 model that proved inadequate by not keeping up with costs and not rewarding our caregivers with honorable wages. Prior to the implementation of value-based reimbursement in 2016, caregiver wages increased by only 12.5% over 9 years. That was a direct reflection of legislative appropriations. They did not keep up with the cost of living. In contrast, since VBR's enactment, caregiver wages have risen nearly 70%, providing much needed financial stability to our workforce. We have also greatly increased the availability of health care benefits to employees. Now is not the time to dismantle a bipartisan agreement to return to a system that did not deliver for our seniors and did not deliver for caregivers. We take pride in the investments our members have been able to make in our caregivers, but the math in the governor's budget is deeply concerning. The combination of the significant funding cuts and the unfunded mandates that are coming from the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board place many nursing facilities in an unsustainable financial position. The first mandate requires 11 holidays to be paid at 150%, which will cost nursing homes an estimated $25,000 each annually. This adds additional costs across all nursing homes of nearly $20 million that will not be covered over the next 4 years. The second mandate establishes a minimum wage for nursing home caregivers that will cost Minnesota nursing homes $175 million in the 26-27 and 28-29 biennium. The Walz administration budget proposal does not cover these costs and makes it even more difficult for care providers to absorb them. The combination of these measures will cause irreparable harm to rural nursing homes across the state, and irreparable harm to the access seniors have to the care they need. While we strongly support providing raises for hardworking caregivers, doing so through an unfunded Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board mandate is not the solution. Instead, House File 1419 ensures the necessary funding is in place up front, a step that should have been required when the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board was created. As legislators, you can change the statute that dictates the way the analysis is done. As you heard from previous testifiers, they are simply following statute on how they're doing their analysis. We support a more in-depth analysis that looks at the actual costs on individual facilities. House File 14 ensures this happens. Thank you, Madam Chair and members for your committee for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee. My name is Laura Salonik, and I am the administrator at the Good Samaritan in Howard Lake. Good Samaritan is a nonprofit provider of long-term care services for nearly or already over 100 years. There are 33 Good Samaritan locations in the state of Minnesota. My location, located in Wright County, provides skilled nursing home services, short-term rehabilitation and therapies, outpatient therapies, respite care, home-delivered meals to people in our community, We also serve veterans as a holding the veteran contract for our county. Our capacity is 32 nursing home residents, and today we are at 100% capacity. I've been the administrator there for over 16 years. I'm here today to provide my support of House File 1419, which would fund the Nursing Home Work Board Standards Board's mandates and provide an annual update to the elderly waiver rates. In 2023, the legislature and the governor took a critical step by implementing a one-time $12.35 add-on to our rates to support and stabilize nursing home care after the pandemic. However, I was disappointed to see that the governor's current proposal cuts nursing facilities and fails to fully mandate the, or fails to fully fund the actual cost of the nursing home workforce mandates. And this shortfall is very concerning to me. According to a long-term care imperative analysis, the proposed funding gap would amount to an estimated $900 million across Minnesota's nursing homes. Such a proposal would significantly undermine the value-based reimbursement model, as Toby mentioned, which has been instrumental in ensuring caregivers receive a livable wage and that nursing homes remain financially viable. I urge this committee to reject the harmful cuts and instead support a sustainable path forward. By passing House File 1419, you will reinforce your commitment to caregivers, to seniors, and to the future of long-term care in the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for my opportunity to testify today.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Nathan Johnson, and I'm the CEO at Pioneer Care. We are a nonprofit senior care organization in Fergus Falls. And I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1419. So just a little bit about us. Pioneer Care operates a nursing home. We have assisted living memory care cottages. We operate an independent living apartment, and we do home and community-based services throughout the counties in our area. We employ about 250 people. We serve about 200 people within our residences, and we serve about 600 people in their homes. I want to start by being very clear. I fully support the goal of increasing caregiver wages. I have been advocating for that for over 20 years in various different ways. But with that said, I want to be equally clear. Legislators must remember that it's the state who sets our reimbursement rates for nursing facilities. So I'm not opposed in any way to providing generous raises to our staff, but when this is done at this magnitude and speed and through a mandate, it must come with a legislative appropriation. So without dedicated funding, this mandate will be financially burdensome on operators, especially in our rural communities. I'll speak just briefly about how we believe this will impact us at Pioneer Care. We have estimated that the impact of the minimum wage mandate will result in a 13% overall increase to our total wage expenses over the 2 years. So in this projection, it's important for me to point out today that we are accounting for wage compression and we are accounting for the impact to our assisted living communities, which share the same workforce and the same wage schedules. So it seems to me that the board and the governor's budget projections ignore these two important factors. We can't be expected to merely just raise everyone to the minimum. In my world, it doesn't really work that way. In our organization, we value merit, we value length of service, and we just can't ignore wage compression, and we can't ignore the impact to our assisted living staff. So simply put, the mandate will increase spending substantially more than the projections we've been hearing about, and we will need an appropriation to avoid material financial setbacks, and House File 1419 does just that for us. I'm also pleased to see that House File 1419 provides an annual update to the elderly waiver rates. This provision will help address the impact of the wage mandate to assisted living settings. So In summary, we know from our surveys that 88% of people in Greater Minnesota believe that seniors have the right to receive long-term care services in their home community, and yet many of our rural areas are at risk of losing capacity. Increasing caregiver wages is a very, very important goal. With that said, an unfunded wage mandate will have a material financial consequence to operators. House File 1419 supports this goal by providing an appropriation to nursing homes and an update to elderly waiver rates. So I thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm the President and CEO of Leading Age Minnesota here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. I want to first start by thanking Representative Schumacher for bringing forward this important legislation. It's kind of feels like old times that we're back here again talking about partnering on a bipartisan way to ensure that seniors have the access to the care that they need, our growing senior population. And I think in terms of while we are talking a lot about wage compression and dollars and cents, it shouldn't be lost on this committee that our state is growing older, and we also need to keep seniors at the forefront of this conversation, asking how are we going to ensure that they have access to the care and services that they need, that Minnesotans agree that they should be able to access in their home communities. I'm here today, obviously, to support House File 1419. It's an incredibly important piece of legislation to further the goal of ensuring access to care for seniors. The legislation provides essential funding to cover the true costs of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board mandates and to ensure that the Elderly Waiver Program receives an appropriate annual rate increase to meet the rising costs of these services. You know, I want to maybe take a step back and sort of share that a bit of good news here. After a period of significant disruption, our workforce is finally beginning to stabilize in the senior care sector. I testified before this committee 4 years ago with an all-time high, sharing with you at that time, we had 23,000 open positions in senior care in our sector. Our most recent data that I believe you have a packet in before you shows that the number of vacant positions in our sector have decreased to 12,500. That's still a big number, but it's significant improvement in our sector. The progress is due to key policy decisions, including the value-based reimbursement model for nursing homes, the 2023 elderly waiver investment, and the temporary nursing home rate add-on that was provided in 2023. Simply put, investing in senior care is good for access to senior care, and it's good for jobs. Incidentally, the inverse is also true. If we underinvest, or worse yet, cutting services and funding to services like the governor's budget proposes to do so is bad for both seniors and workers. While the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board was intended to address working conditions, it instead creates a situation that would provide serious financial strain on providers, and quite frankly, ignores the interaction with the governor's proposed budget cuts. The mandates extend beyond nursing homes as well, which is something we haven't talked about. Assisted living providers who compete in the same labor market are also closely monitoring the Nursing Home Workforce Standard Board's actions. The minimum wage mandate for nursing home inevitably impacts wages in all settings. Our survey that was just completed indicates that assisted living providers found that 70% will need to raise wages in response to the board's mandates. And while, as it's already been noted, that the legislature has provided an important rate update to elderly waiver 2 years ago, it did not establish a mechanism for regular rate increases to address impacts and interactions like these that we're describing today. So the proposal before you would help with that situation by introducing an annual update to the elderly waiver rates, ensuring stability for home and community-based services. The long-term care imperative has found that 89% of facilities predict deteriorating financial performance due to the unfunded mandates of the board. If implemented without proper funding, these mandates will inevitably lead to closures and reduce access to care, especially in rural communities. That same survey also highlights that simply relying on reserves for nursing homes is not an option for over half of Minnesota senior providers. If the legislature chooses not to further invest in these critical areas, or if they lack a budget target to do so, I would strongly urge adoption of the next proposal on the agenda. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify. Thank you, Chair Schumacher, for bringing forward this important legislation.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Seeing none, we'll go to member questions. Okay, Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to state that, yes, we're worried about the proposals in the governor's budget. We've got more work to do, and I look forward to collaborating to figure out what is the best pathway. Knowing that we've got a deficit in our budget right now, as you're aware of, but also lingering questions, what will happen at the federal level. So appreciate you coming before us, and we look forward to working with all the providers and also making sure that we take care of the workers who are providing the care in those settings. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? All right, hearing no more questions, Chair Schumacher renews his motion and his bill is laid over. Laid over.
All right, members, and as we wait for the bill author to arrive, we are, instead of sitting here awkwardly and quietly for 2 minutes, we're just going to be in recess for about 2 minutes.
I'm so proud.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm like, just quick recess. I'm gonna come another G3 and just stand there and like. I go, told Spencer, it was 2 minutes here.
Sorry. I'm like, laid over. Laid over.
You did good. Yeah.
Thank you. We're moving along.
Yeah. Okay, she's walking over. Yay! Okay.
Nice work, Dawn.
Thank you.
I know.
You guys are great.
That was so good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, I looked at my bag and I was like, well, I don't need anything in there. I was like, I feel like I need something.
Well, no, and I was like, I printed them out yesterday. I was like, so ahead of schedule.
I know, and I was like,
I paper clipped them. They were on my desk. I had one for you, one for you. And then this morning, I like got here and I was like, And like, because I knew it was going to be like a busy day. And yes. It was like, I had to, it was just like, it's awesome. Like,
I'm glad it worked out. Thanks, Joseph, for helping us get that.
Yes, printed, yes.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Just let me know, like, yeah. Yeah. Just, like, always know that, like,
And I can text too. If you haven't printed something, let me know, because then I have to go upstairs and print it, which is fine. Like, but like, yeah, because I think I said I was still waiting for the presentation to come in the email that I sent.
Yeah,
because she sent it to me at, like, I emailed her after caucus, and I was like, is this coming? And so,
sorry, by the way, I completely forgot you don't need like login information to access a printer. Like, I had a computer.
That's okay. Yeah, no, that's good to know for the future. Yeah. Yeah.
I just didn't know like how to send things, but yeah.
That's all good. It's all good. Now I'm, yeah, and then like with like Natalie being in another committee and like me.
Give you a couple seconds to catch your breath, and then we'll get to it.
And then when I'll just, right away, you'll tell me if we have an amendment, right? Because there's somebody offered an A1. There's an A1 amendment.
Oh, okay. From them?
No, it's me.
Oh, so, you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have an A1.
There.
I got to see the...
Hi.
Oh, hi.
How are you? Nice to meet you.
Great.
I'm
just
going to
see the A1.
Yeah. If you want.
I can try to release some stuff.
Nope, the music.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my.
Oh, does she need paper? All right, the D2. Okay, I gotta get all my stuff here.
I move as quickly as I can.
Thank you for coming. I have one.
I'm so glad there wasn't a ton of questions. I mean, it would have been great, but
yeah. We can do this in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
On labor?
Yes. I put it in notes.
Yeah, my notes are in the other.
Okay.
I call the meeting back to order. Representative Zelensikar, welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 500 be re-referred to the Committee on Labor and Economic Development, Finance and Policy. And there is a DE2 amendment. Representative Zelensikar to the DE2 amendment.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher and members. The DE2 amendment is an amendment that simply prohibits the standard that was created by the Nursing Home Standards Board. It prohibits it from going into effect unless the cost of the standard to each nursing home is estimated and paid in full by the legislative body. That is the amendment.
Thank you. And Representative Zelensikar, and this is an author's amendment. So I will again move adoption of the DE2 amendment. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The DE2 is adopted. Representative Zelensikar, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Schumacher and members. I'm here today to present House File 500. And as most of you know,
I am a retired nursing home administrator. I worked with seniors for over 40 years. I slept on the floor of the assisted livings during the pandemic. I worked as a CNA. I worked side by side with the staff. There probably wasn't a role any of us didn't play. When I tell you I've done it all and that I know how meaningful and how hard this work is in these 24-hour settings, it's because I've lived it. You've heard testimony today from Chair Schumacher and Rep. Noor's bill to bring critical funding to nursing homes in Minnesota and assisted living facilities, and I look forward to supporting that legislation this year. I view House File 500 as amended as an insurance policy for the state of Minnesota, for seniors, and for this legislative body. Mandates without money have serious consequences. I'm bringing it forward because the governor is proposing to cut Minnesota nursing homes. I'm bringing it forward because an unelected board has finalized two rules that are going to greatly harm Minnesota seniors. I'm bringing it forward because the board has refused to listen to the concerns of the provider community about the millions in unfunded costs. It's got misuse and it had an expedited rulemaking, and because the legislator should not ever abdicate its responsibility to assure care for seniors in the 300-plus remaining nursing homes we have in the state. With the amendment, House File 500 ensures that the spending authority and the oversight of the budget remains with the 201 members of the legislative body that was elected to serve Minnesotans, not a 9-person board appointed by the governor. I'm very supportive of nursing homes. I fought hard last session to make sure that we addressed it after a pandemic. These nursing homes are coming out of a serious pandemic. I worked as a CNA and a nursing home administrator for 40 years. So when I speak about the impact it's going to have on the state, it's because it's real. And I will continue to fight for high wages like we've been doing for decades, and that funding source comes from this body. I'd like to now turn it over to my testifiers to speak on more specifics of this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zelenskar. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Paxton Whiffler, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Monarch Healthcare. We have the privilege to serve 2,900 nursing home residents a day in many parts of Minnesota, including Representative Zelenskar's district, the Shores, and Two Harbors. The types of residents we care for range from simply the shelter challenge to the most clinically complex ventilator-dependent patients and really everything in between. I'm here today in support of House File 500, which is really a common sense approach to addressing the high upfront costs that are created by the mandates imposed by the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. We have closely monitored the board's actions as they considered the development of the two standards mentioned earlier today. I was deeply concerned when the holiday pay requirement was announced, providing us really only 3 weeks to prepare. This mandate alone will cost our facilities approximately $1 million this year, creating a significant financial burden for our organization. The proposed minimum wage standards present even greater concerns, as it would significantly increase our costs. You've already heard this, but I want to reiterate it again. As the long-term care imperative estimates, these mandates will cost facilities across all of Minnesota in excess of $200 million. As nursing home providers operating under Minnesota's rate equalization policy, we have no mechanisms to offset these unfunded mandate increases unless state provides additional funding. We all want to increase caregiver wages, but the board's approach, along with the governor's budget proposal, has failed to consider the financial viability of nursing facilities and the potential impact on access to care if these mandates remain unfunded. For these reasons, I strongly support House File 500, which clarifies that these mandates must be funded by the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Representative Zelenskar, anyone else for your bill presentation? Welcome to the committee, Ms. Hubert. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Erin Hubert, and I'm with Leading Age Minnesota here on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. And I would like to thank Representative Zalesnikar for offering House File 500. The imperative supports the bill as amended. And as people have said, it's pretty straightforward. The proposal would ensure that the legislature fully funds the mandates of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board or puts those requirements on pause until that happens. I want to highlight a few examples of how these ill-conceived standards will impact Minnesota. The only care center in all of Cook County estimates that the cost of the minimum wage mandate will be about $1.4 million between 2026 and 2027. That community may need to double its local tax levy to maintain operations. And by the way, the next closest non-VA nursing home is over 80 miles away. A metro provider estimates nearly $500,000 in annual expense just to comply with the holiday pay mandate. There is written testimony in your packets from a care center in New Ulm that estimates it will need to either drain its reserves or take out a loan to cover the $723,000 in annual costs for the mandates. Concerns like these were raised by the three employer representatives of the board, nursing homes, and the long-term care imperative to no avail. In fact, the three employer members of that board had their motives impugned and their concerns entirely dismissed. The last 18 months have made it very clear, unless the legislature takes action this year, the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board will continue to ignore community providers, minimize the impact that its actions have on access to care, and weaponize its expedited rulemaking authority. We fully support raising wages for caregivers, as you have heard in the previous proposal, and as you have heard Long-Term Care Imperative come forward year after year to do. We need reliable funding to offer those competitive wages and ensure that seniors have access to care. We would urge the legislature to either fund those mandates or render them ineffective until they can be paid for. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Hubert. Representative Zalesnikar, anyone else for the bill presentation? Welcome to the committee. Mr. Berndt, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I will try to keep this brief. My name is Kyle Berndt. I'm here today on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative to express our support for House File 500. This proposal is critical as we assess the current state of Minnesota's nursing facilities. Coming out of a pandemic that placed unprecedented strain on the industry, we agree that caregivers deserve a raise. However, these unfunded mandates would hurt access to nursing home care in Minnesota, as you heard earlier. It is unfair to require nursing homes to take on additional debt to comply with mandates set by a board that has not been responsive to their concerns. The employer minority report, which we have requested to be included in your packets, highlights several key issues, including the inadequacy of the fiscal analysis conducted by the board of the minimum wage standard, which is updated as part of the amendment at how they would do that fiscal analysis. The absence of a statement of need and reasonableness, and no additional public hearings after over 50 public comments were requesting one. You've heard enough about the costs, the $200 million, but the governor's budget provides only $15 million. That's less than 10% of the actual cost of nursing homes. We simply ask legislators to pay for the board's actions or render them ineffective, so we ask for your support of House File 500 as amended. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Berndt. Representative Zalesnikar, anyone else on the presentation of your bill?
Chair Schumacher, no.
Okay, then we will move to public testimony and go down the, as it's listed in the agenda, starting with Teresa Bates with SEIU Healthcare. And members, we have about 20 minutes left. We do intend to devote on this today. We'll ask the testifiers to keep to between 2 and 3 minutes, and we'll get through it. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Chair Schumacher and members of the committee, my name is Teresa Brees. I do laundry at a nursing home in Roseville, and I'm a member of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota in Iowa. I'm here to speak in opposition to House File 500, which would get rid of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board. Let me start with author's delete everything amendment. Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. I hope I got that right. and members of the committee for moving away from a full repeal of the standards board. We appreciate a step in the right direction. I will let Brian Elliott from FCIU State Council talk about our remaining concerns with the new funding proposal. I want to talk about why the board, the paid holiday rule, and the minimum wage rule are so important to me and my coworkers. I have worked in long-term care for over 25 years and have seen the short staffing causes, damage short staffing causes. I testified in favor of this board in 2023 and shared the story of the time that year I worked 23 straight days because we were so short-staffed. Eventually, I tore my bicep tendon and was barely able to lift my arm. I've struggled with this injury ever since. I saw the low pay and lack of benefits and how that caused so many people to leave despite wanting to work, to do this work. We just aren't treated with the respect we deserve. I was part of the largest nursing home strike in Minnesota history last March because so many of us were fed up. The status quo, where so much money goes to the homes and workers struggle to get by, is bad for us workers, but also bad for our residents. I testified many times in favor of this board because I think bringing together workers, employers, and experts is what we need to address this crisis. I was excited the board spent so much time listening to people across the state and decided that raising wages and offering time and a half holiday pay as first steps. It's amazing how many people have already got paid holidays on Martin Luther King and President's Day who previously didn't get anything extra. And the wage increases are going to be incredibly helpful. In my eyes, as a nursing home worker, this board is doing amazing to address the staffing crisis we all know is a problem for Minnesotans. I was very surprised to hear that this bill to get rid of the board. I've told people I actually think more jobs should have a board like this. I'm sure employers don't like not having total power anymore. But clearly, their way wasn't working. I ask you to vote no on this bill and would encourage you to find ways we can all work together to raise standards for all nursing home workers. I hope the amendment is the start of such a conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bates, for your testimony today. Next is Brian Elliott, SEIU Minnesota State Council. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Yes, the chair does that.
It's the chair.
It is the chair. Thank you.
Just a way to ease you in. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
You know, what a way to start. My name is Brian Elliott. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm the executive director of the Service Employees International Union Minnesota State Council. SEIU represents nearly 70,000 essential workers across Minnesota who provide care and support for families in a variety of settings, from individual homes to schools to hospitals and the state's largest commercial buildings, and including thousands of dedicated workers in nursing homes. As one of the lead advocates for the creation of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board, I imagine it's no surprise that I'm here today in opposition to the proposed repeal of the board. I now know that given the delete all, I'll speak to that. But quickly, let me just say, some standards boards have been in place around this country for almost 100 years, and the idea is pretty straightforward. How can workers, employers, and other industry stakeholders, like the relevant regulatory state agencies in this case, come together to solve the biggest problems facing an industry? In this case, the problem we all face is a significant workforce shortage in skilled nursing facilities. And who better to involve in solving this problem than the very workers already committed to the important work of caring for our seniors every day? The same workers we need to retain and who best understand why they came into the industry as well as why others may not. The key, however, is coming together to work collaboratively. I attended nearly all of the board meetings, a number of its work group meetings, and I can tell you that what I saw was a very cordial environment with respect for each other's opinions. I heard agreement in wanting to support our essential nursing home workers. In fact, that was the reason given by the industry representatives for abstaining rather than voting against the rules promulgated by the board. They wanted to support their workers, but needed to focus more on funding for the industry. What I noticed, however, was that this focus on funding, which of course rests with all of you here at the legislature and not with the board, seems to have interfered with the ability of the industry representatives to focus on the issues under the jurisdiction of the board, to the detriment of the collaboration that we really need to solve the workforce crisis. And this isn't surprising to those of us in the representing workers in this industry. We've repeatedly offered to work together to advocate jointly for a solution to the funding issues raised by the industry, but not in the absence of the accountability needed to ensure that resources are actually addressing the workforce shortage. In conclusion, now given that, I think the DE2 is a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, we still cannot support the bill as amended. This is because we know that wages and benefits have not kept pace with nursing home rate increases over the last decade. We know that the bill as amended will have the effect of punishing operators who've been doing the right thing while rewarding operators who've been chronically underinvesting in their workforce. And we know that this fails to account for natural wage growth, as the original Standards Board legislation does, demanding upfront funding of wage increases that would have, that in some of which would have happened anyway, rather than just the additional wage growth attributable to the minimum wage rule. And while we would agree that the current funding system is imperfect, we know that the board rules are not unfunded. And this is important. They are not unfunded. They are rather fully funded, just not on a timeline that the industry prefers. That is the idea behind the values-based reimbursement program. I'll, of course, stick around. We'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you so much for your time today, and thank you to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott, for your testimony. Sorry for the furniture. We have Vicki Nijay, the local president. And after that will be Paxton Whiffler. Welcome to the committee. Please correct your name for me and yes, for the record, and present your testimony.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee. I'm Vicki Kanagi. I'm from Worthington, Minnesota. I am an LPN at South Shore Care Center. We used to be a facility of two different nursing homes, and after the pandemic, we ended up having one facility close, and we had to merge into one large facility, and that was due to lack of workers and keeping our staff. This bill really has helped us. The committee has made our conditions safer, and with the wages and stuff and the insurance, or sorry, the wages and the holiday pay has also been a great benefit for our workers. We've actually seen more people coming into our facility and applying for jobs and staying. With the training, that is really important. We never really had that before. So they just didn't keep up on our training as well. And it's really nice that we now have that training so that our workers feel better in their jobs and are more able to stay there. So, as an LPN, I do work in the nursing home, and I know there are a lot of problems to fix, and but I do feel we're going in the right direction, and all of our workers do feel the same way. With our retention problem, I know pay increases and benefits are very important to keep our staff. We want quality staff. Quality staff to keep our residents. Our residents are the most important thing to us. And it has always been that way, and that's who we want to be there for them. So I'm kind of opposed to this just because of the funding, but it is, we are definitely going in the right direction, and I hope that we continue to do that. So thank you for your time.
Ms. Carnegie, thank you for your testimony and for making the trip from Worthington.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you so much.
For this. Next is Paxton Wiffler, Monarch Healthcare Management. Never mind. Next, actually, is Taya Gargano, Ask Me Local 1851.
It's Taya Gargano, but thank you, Chairman Schumacher and members of the committee. I am here in opposition of the H5 500 bill or amendment. I work at Elder Care in Bemidji. I have worked there for 6 years. I worked there as a CNA, and now I work as an LPN there. I like having this board. I think that it has helped us, especially in the last couple of years. We do have more consistency in staffing. It gives us, I mean, with the benefits and stuff, it makes working at a nursing home more desirable, which to a lot of people, it isn't a super desirable job. I personally like it. I mean, I value the elderly people. I value the safety board for valuing our safety. I think it is a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that's really all I have to say, I suppose. But I think it's a good thing to have, and we should keep it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Ms. Gargano, for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Finally on the list, Jerry Miller, president of Ask Me, 65 Local 1851. Welcome to the committee.
Hi.
If you could please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Hi, my name is Jerry Miller. Thank you, Chair Schumacher and committee. I am a certified nursing assistant in Bemidji and president of our local 1851. And I'm here today to oppose HF 500. I have worked in the nursing home as a CNA for 33 years. I help our residents do their daily tasks, the dressing, the bathing, monitoring vitals, coordinating their care, ensuring nutrition. A lot of our residents take two people to move or do a lot of stuff with. And if you don't have the staff, you are looking at higher injuries for us. We need to keep the help. We help our community, our loved ones, to age with dignity. We love our jobs, but often we are overworked and underpaid. It is a challenge to recruit the new CNAs to come into this line of work. Our residents become part of our family, so it makes it very difficult when we're working short and we just can't give them the care they need. During my tenure, I've seen us go through some rough times, short staffing, hard to do your job safely. We've had mandatory stayovers because of insufficient funds. As you might work 8 to 10 days in a pay period, in the 2 weeks. And if you worked 8, 7 of those days, you maybe were doing a 16-hour shift just to cover the floor. And that was even before the pandemic. So the wages, I get where it is for an expense for the homes, but we have to also be able to provide for our families and to do the job. It is expensive to try to get more staff in. We had to deal with traveling staff. And then your training and having to still pick up an awful lot of slack for them not knowing our facility, our residents. So we were worried a lot of times about being able to stay open if we could get through that. And that was well before COVID, like I said. So the Nursing Home Workforce Board, Standard Board legislation that passed in 23 has been important to us. It gives us a seat at the table and has given us the tools we need to retain our staff.
With the steps like the industry-wide minimum wage and time and a half for holidays, which is big because we do not close. So other people can have a holiday off. We don't. So we've seen a lot of improvements in the recruiting and the morale. It helps us make sure things are in place to train staff and ensure we can do our job safely. I thank Representative Zellinger for introducing her amendment, but I'm still concerned about how it will affect the goals of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Boards. I respectfully ask that you oppose HF 500.
Thank you, Ms. Miller, for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify? Seeing no one, public testimony is closed. We have Representatives Fisher, Bomani Hiltzley, and Vernig on the list for questions. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I first of all oppose the bill that we've got coming out here because I think it's missing the mark. And the reason I say that, by the information I have found since 2014, the average pay for people who work in nursing homes has gone up by less than 50%. But during that same time frame, the reimbursement rates to the nursing homes have gone up by over 100%. We used to be in 2014, 21st in the country of what we paid for nursing homes. Today, we are number five, so we're fifth most expensive in the country. We've gone from 21 to up to fifth. And so what I'm saying is, I think the dollars in a lot of areas are out there. I'm not denying that there are some nursing homes that may be struggling. But the thing that's a tell to me of what's happening in the industry is, back when I first started in 2013, almost 90% of the nursing homes were nonprofit. Today, the large share of nursing homes are for-profit. So I think we need to take a deeper look as to what's happening out there and where the dollars are really going, because the increases we've put out there, we've more than doubled the pay. It's not going to the workers, and we need to make sure it's going to the workers.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Bomani Hiltzley.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Zeleninska. I know that we've had many conversations around this topic, and I so appreciate your experience in bringing your voice to this conversation. With that said, as a former SEIU member and as a CNA, a former CNA, I have felt the exhaustion of being overworked, the frustration of not having enough staff to provide the care for the residents they deserve, and the heartbreak of knowing that no matter how much I cared, I was being overstretched beyond my limits. I didn't leave because I wanted to or because I didn't care. I left because I had no choice. So I know that this struggle, because I've lived it. Now, as a legislator and on the House Human Services Committee, I refuse to stand by while nursing home workers continue to be pushed beyond their breaking point. When we fail to protect those who provide care, we fail the residents who depend on them. Understaffing means grandmothers, grandparents, and all that we care for waiting too long for help, and a disabled person missing critical care, and a resident suffering alone because workers simply don't have enough hands. That's why I oppose HF 500. This bill does not do enough to prioritize the needs of the frontline workers, who are the backbone of the quality care that we pride ourselves in. Safe staffing, fair wages, and real worker protections aren't just optional. They are essential. If we don't care, more workers will leave and more residents will suffer. To my colleagues, we have a choice. We can either fight for the people who dedicate their lives to care for the loved ones, or we can watch the system collapse under a weight of inaction. I choose to fight. I urge you to stand with me and oppose HF 500 because our workers, our residents deserve better. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bomani Hiltzley. Representative Vernig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did work in a nursing home for quite a few years where the holiday pay was paid at time and a half, so I thought that was a standard practice. This is interesting. I appreciate that the board has put that in place. I also went on to inspect hundreds of nursing homes in the state as a OSHA investigator and compliance officer, and that work resulted in safe patient handling standards. Having a board like this helps establish a floor for worker safety. As we've heard, there is a major discrepancy between management and labor, and this board gives voice to those often left behind. So because of that, I have a really hard time supporting the abolition of the Nursing Home Workforce Standards Board.
Thank you, Representative Vernick. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's good to see you again in Human Services, Representative Zalesnica. But this bill is not yet ready for action, so I request a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Seeing no further discussion, the Committee of Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Vice Chair Gilman.
Gilman, aye.
Representative Knorr.
Knorr, no.
Representative Keeler.
Keeler, no.
Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Representative Curran.
No.
Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Representative Franson.
Franson, yes.
Representative Frederick.
Frederick, no.
Representative Gander.
Again, Representative Gander.
Gander, aye.
Gander votes aye.
Representative Gordon.
Gordon, aye.
Representative Momani Hiltzley.
Momani Hiltzley, no.
Representative Jacob.
Jacob, aye.
Representative Knutson.
Knutson, aye.
Representative Murphy.
Murphy, aye.
Representative Norris.
No.
And Representative Hicks is excused. There being 9 ayes and 7 nays, House File 500, as amended, is re-referred to the Committee on Labor, on Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. We'll see you all again next Tuesday, March 4th at 8:15. We are adjourned.